Welcome to Comics,
episode 259. This week, we talk about
A-Force, War Zones.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the cast.
I don't. Is there any nerdy thing to talk about that's happened in the last week? I don't think there's any new developments, are there? Overwatch is hella fun.
Not much. Yeah, everyone's just talking about Overwatch.
I saw Grant playing it.
Yes, he and like his whole friends group have been, and I'm just over here like FPS.
Yeah. When it came out on Tuesday, I took the whole day off, and I spent the whole day playing Overwatch, and it was a great day, because I think everybody's MMR was low, and my MMR was really low, and the person I was playing with was playing as a healer, and he was playing with me, so he got a little bit of a head start, but not a huge one, so both of our MMR was about the same level, both pretty low. But I've noticed within the last week, I've been rolling with like all of my friends in a full pre-made group. And the bonus it gives you for being in a pre-made group in terms of, like, matchmaking ranking is insane. So whenever I play with my friends, we get curb stomped.
Oh, no.
So I don't... It sounds really shitty, but this game, it feels like I'm being disincentivized to play with my friends. Because I get why it's given the bonus. Like, supposedly, you know, you're playing with your friends, and so you have better coordination, better teamwork.
Yeah, you can, like, talk and...
Exactly. Yeah. The problem is, even if we roll a pre-made of six, right? Only three of those six are really going to be in the same voice chat. Two of them are going to be on TeamSpeak. Two of them are going to be on Skype. I can't usually play. When I'm playing, usually my daughter is like out here sleeping while my wife is going through Facebook on her phone. So I can't be in the voice chat. I can pick to hear one or the other, but I can't hear both TeamSpeak and Skype at the same time. You know, and it's like.
Y'all need to like use the built-in Blizzard one.
Yeah, I know, and it's not bad. The problem is there's, like, people get really dogmatic about their...
True.
Super dogmatic about it. We've tried a bunch of different stuff, and everybody's like, well, why are we doing Discord now? I thought we just did Mumble, and I just finally installed Mumble and got it working the way I liked. And then there's, like, always... There's two motherfuckers still using TeamSpeak from, like, 6 years ago.
And there's always the one guy who, like, whichever one you suggest, he's like, no, I hate that one.
Yes, exactly. So, this Blizzard chat is actually really good, which is in stark contrast to the World of Warcraft in-game chat.
Oh, God, yeah.
Which was horrendous, but the one in Overwatch is legitimately really, really well done, and it works really well. But it just, even so, take a group of six, only four of them are going to be on the voice chat, and it doesn't change the fact that I aim like shit. I fundamentally suck at first-person shooters, and so do most of my friends in that pre-made. But, like, if we're all rank 15, on average, we'll say, we're playing against people who are solo queuing who are rank 20-something. And it's like, even if they are shitty rank 20-somethings, they've just been playing a whole lot, they have more practice with every hero and the power interactions, and they have more time with these characters and knowing how to play them. Even if they have the same crappy aim that I do. And it just... I feel like I have more fun not playing with my friends.
I get where you're coming from. I'm kind of like a side problem where all my friends are actually fairly good at FPSs and I'm just really intrinsically bad at them. it's those and fucking roguelike platformers are the two genres that I am so bad at, it's hard to enjoy them.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so it's like, oh god, I remember, like, the last time I played an FPS was Left 4 Dead 2, and I'm just such a terrible hindrance to my team every time. It's bad times.
Yeah, I played Left 4 Dead, just, I would play that at LAN parties and with huge groups of people, because I would always suck as the humans, which it's fine. The deck is stacked against you in that game anyway. You're probably not going to get there, but I was always awesome at the zombies if I got, mm-hmm. like, as a belcher, because you just have to run up close and barf on somebody, and then if you die, you accomplished your mission. Like, it's fine. You are a disposable person when you play as the zombies. So I was still able to have fun there. That wasn't too bad. But I know what you mean. I played all of the Halo games. I played through all of them because I kind of like the story, but I played through all of them on easy mode.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't care. I'm getting to experience the story I enjoy, and I'm getting the fundamental feeling of feeling like a badass because I walk up and punch a tank and it like dies. I'll take it. But Overwatch is purely multiplayer, and it just, I bought it to play with my friends, and now I have less fun playing with my friends. And either part of it I think is because they don't have a competitive mode built in yet, so if you are a competitive mm-hmm. person, there's nowhere else to go. You get queued up with the casuals. So it's like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I haven't touched it. It's just like, there's nothing for me to do there because I hate playing with randos. Yeah. I am the most rando-adverse person ever.
Yeah.
And my friends are just way better than me, so I'm like, fuck it.
Yeah, my buddy Rage and I get by that. I'm usually a tank and he's usually a healer. And we just like, fine. If you want the DPS, be DPS. You know, there's only so much they can screw up generally, but yeah. in this game that only goes so far. The other thing, I'll give Blizzard some credit. What'll happen is we'll roll 5 in the pre-made, and then somebody else will log on, and we'll all be about rank 15. And then the friend that I know that logs on is like rank 40, and I'll just add them. And I don't envy the matchmaking system trying to find a good fit there.
Yeah, I mean, you always end up with the kind of situation where it's just like, nope.
Yeah, either my super awesome level 40 friend, like, feels like he's playing against bots, or it stacks the deck so hard against us because he's on our team that then it's not fun for our team and we lose because it's just one guy versus six. It's something that I'm sure will shake out over time as they get better at the matchmaking and once they put in a competitive mode, but Overwatch has been, like, the big hype, and I've had this nagging frustration for, like, a couple days, and all my friends are so into it, I feel like I can't unload this on them. But I can load it on the faceless internet and my friend who doesn't play, so thank you.
Yeah, like, I fully sympathize with everything you've said thus far, so. All right.
Good, I'm not crazy.
I get it. No, I totally get it.
Well, you want to talk about this week's comic?
This week's comic.
I guess we must.
This week, we read A-Force War Zones, written by G. Willow Wilson and Marguerite Bennett. And this collects the first 5 issues of A-Force, which were part of the Secret Wars event. And let's just do this up front. I don't know what the fuck Secret Wars was. I don't know what the fuck Battle War was. And the comic kind of explains a little bit of it, but I was really excited to read a comic about an all-female Avengers written and drawn, just written by female creators.
Mm-hmm.
With some characters that I love She-Hulk. I think Medusa's awesome. I love Captain Marvel. I fucking love Miss America Chavez every time I see her. She is badass as hell. And so I was really excited to read this, but the whole time I was super confused.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I think that even if we were familiar with Secret War and everything related, which I also am not, I would have also been a bit confused because I'm not sure that the story had it was, you know, made confusing by the setting. I think I picked up like enough of that to understand the problems they were having. Yeah. And here's my thing. I think that the concept was really good. I really liked the characters and how they were done. But in terms of the plot, the initial mean reaction for me is like, why did you tell me this story? But the thing behind that is there are some things that it does that I just... So Loki's betrayal felt fairly meaningless to me because I didn't get to see enough of Loki being relevant to this team. She mostly, like, hugged Nico.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't see her engage in, like, a huge amount of teamwork. Like, I think if Medusa had been the one who betrayed them, it would have felt more poignant just because it was built up more. And of course, you know, she was the obvious one there, so, you can't. But, the tension between Medusa and She-Hulk would have made that make more sense. It's just like Loki, you know, what was she doing? And the other thing is Singularity. That character was really sweet, and I liked her, but her loss didn't feel like such a big deal because we just met her.
Yeah, kinda, yeah.
And, well, I don't know, like, I'm sure for Nico, it's like, okay, she meets a new friend, but it also seems like she's known this girl for a couple days.
Yeah, but Nico's really... Nico is just getting repeatedly punched in the gut throughout this comic.
Yeah, she's having a bad time.
Punch in the gut, America Chavez gone. Punch in the gut. Singular, punch in the gut. Loki's actually the betrayer. Like, it's just... This is the worst, like, 3 days for Nico. Yeah, I get what you're talking about with you know, Medusa maybe being too obvious, but I feel like Loki was super obvious. As soon as they mentioned the word traitor, I'm like, oh, it's the fucking god of, how is it not the god of trickery? It's always Loki. It's fucking always Loki. And I feel like some of these guys should have known, because Loki was in Young Avengers with them, and Loki did this to them in Young Avengers too when he was Kid Loki. Now it's just Lady Loki. It's still Loki, though.
Now, but see, that's the disappointing thing, because it felt almost like it relied on the fact that it was Loki to make this a serious problem. So, like, what would the author have done if she didn't have Loki to just be, like, the obvious betrayal point? Right? Yeah. Like, it almost felt like Loki betrayed them because she was Loki.
Yeah.
Because, well, you know what it was? I think that the motives were not gone into enough, because first Loki lies about how she just did this to set things straight in the power structure so something like what happened to America Chavez wouldn't happen to anyone else. And then everyone immediately saw through that lie because they're like, the timeline for that doesn't work.
Yeah, that doesn't quite line up. But that would have lined up for Medusa.
Yes, it would have. Because she's been saying this, like, from the start.
Yeah.
Like, way before the start.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I don't know. Like, I think Loki just betrayed them because she was Loki, and I think that, okay, there are some things that people always do in comics. It's just their thing. Like, Wolverine is gruff and calls people buddy.
Yeah.
Loki betrays people. Batman hunts criminals. like that. There are just tropes, but I think that they also have to be connected to more than just, like, oh, well, of course, look, you would betray someone.
Yeah, who is it that I don't remember who says the line, but they say you loved, says to Loki, she says, you loved us, but you love power more. And it's like, that's okay. Her flaw is the fundamental part of her character. Like, Loki has been power hungry since the beginning of Loki's existence. So why, I don't know. It feels really stale that it was Loki. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I guess my problem with this is just that I didn't feel like the plot was as strong as I needed it to be to feel engaged in what was happening. And the characters were good, but didn't carry it for me.
Yeah, a lot of them felt like cardboard cutouts of their normal selves. Like, Carol Danvers as Captain Marvel was just the character who likes to punch things, and She-Hulk was the character who has responsibility. Like, they have, and it's because this team, this A-Force, is almost literally every single female hero in the Marvel universe. I mean, you look at that cover, it's practically everyone. So there's only, I get there's only so much space that you can have to flesh these characters out, but it also only focused on like four or five. And
maybe the plot went too many different directions for it to work out that way. I don't know. I don't know if this comic was trying to do too much within it, within the realm of it being Battle World. I think that could be part of it too. Like introducing this team and the dynamic and the characters is one thing, but then you got to do this whole Arcadia thing and Battle World and Doom's Law and the Thors and all this kind of stuff and the Shield. I don't know what the hell. I have no idea where America Chavez went. And there's background, there's like background panels showing you the world and the women are in costumes and you recognize the men heroes and they're the ones going around doing the super domestic stuff. And I have no context for why that is that way. It's not that I'm completely left behind, right? I'm a smart enough reader to pick up what Battle World is. The snippets that they drop telling you that I understand the, some of the fundamental workings of this world. Doom is in absolute control. He has turned people like Thor, or have been Thor, into his police force to enforce his laws and all of the different sections of Battleworld. Got it. Cool. Why in Arcadia is Luke Cage pushing a stroller? And not fighting also? I don't know. And then at the end, when the zombies come, it's still just all the women fighting. Where are the dudes? Like Black Bolt, like, gets out of bed and then looks over and sees that Medusa's gone, and then he's never in the fight? I don't know. Dude, you're Black Bolt. You could kick some serious ass. What are you doing? I don't have context for that part of the story. There's so much that I didn't have context for, and it skipped over, but it still didn't feel like it did enough for the characters.
A little more than that, I don't feel like if I had context, I would even necessarily, like, have a strong idea of what was happening, because Some of those things just didn't make sense, like the fact that when you see them having the big fight at the end, like you said, it's all the women, and where are the men? And, like, it almost, at first I thought that it was, like, an alternate universe type of thing where there's only women, and I was like, oh, that's really cool. But then you see the dudes, and they're not the hero force. I'm like, okay, that's cool, because She-Hulk has picked, like, you know, a bunch of ladies, and that's really cool. But then, like, the island's under attack, and, you know, she says, anybody who pitches in is going to be part of a force today, so go for it. And where are these people? Like, these power... I guess we do see a few of them fighting. My guess is that the idea was to keep it very female-focused.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I don't have any issue with, because I think that it's a very reasonable complaint that we see big battles happening in other comics where, you know, it's we the action focuses on all the male characters and we see some ladies, like, hovering in the background doing nothing.
Yeah, shooting off into the edge of the panel.
Yeah. So, you know, that inversion is interesting to me, but it also felt kind of like, shouldn't they be helping? Right? And that could just be me as a reader missing things, like not paying enough attention to what's going on in the art. And they were, like, fairly chaotic scenes, the fight scenes. So,
yeah, and I mean, I also kind of want to come to Marvel's defense here against myself, I suppose. The cover of this thing has the Battle World logo on it. It has the Secret Wars logo on it. It says Secret Wars, like, on page 2. This is technically Volume 0, not Volume 1. Volume 1 will be out later this year and collects the first 4 issues of the second series of A-Force, which ran this year, in 2016. Ah. So this first 5 issues is very much an event tie-in. That said, I saw these covers online. I was super excited for this team. I bought it before Secret Wars started. Like, I added it to my pull list when I saw the covers, when I saw the solicit for this title and this team, and I don't give two shits about the major events. I just see this team, and I see these characters, and I like these characters, and I want to read this comic. But it's a delicate balance that the creators have to toe there, right? Because they generate excitement about this team, and they use characters that you like. And I love strong female characters. I think that they are more dynamic and interesting to read on the whole than male characters. Which isn't to say that there aren't male-led books that I don't love the shit out of, and quite a few of them we've read for this comic. But generally, I find female characters to be more dynamic and interesting because they're not written nearly as much, so there's many more stories that are yet to be written around them. So an all-female character book sounds really awesome to me, and the covers are really cool looking, and I wanted to pick them up. So I bought this trade, and now I'm super disappointed. And maybe I wanted volume one, but you do a good job generating this excitement outside of the realm of this major event, and I don't know how to consolidate those two.
Well, this is a Marvel problem, right? Because what they do is they tend to have the one run, sometimes multiple volumes, of an event. And they don't take all the side stuff and stick it in there. Like, you'll have Spider-Man Secret War and She-Hulk Secret War and Avengers Secret War. And so you're going to have, you know, 100 to 200 issues sometimes that you need to read, depending on the size of the event and who is involved, right? Because, I remember looking at some of them and there were like, you know, over a dozen, like, side trades of what's this guy doing for this 5 minutes that we don't see him in the main line. You know, like you said, that's very tricky for authors to work with, because not only do they have to know what their characters are doing, they have to understand the greater context, which I suppose you have to in any canonical work, but then you also might need to know what's happening in, like, these 23 other trades, and it gets really complicated. And at the same time, I don't know if it's necessarily the reader's responsibility to also do that level of research, right? Yeah. Because maybe if we had read all of Secret War, we'd feel more strongly positive about this comic. But I also think that strong comics shouldn't need the universe context. For instance, last week we read Vision, and I don't really know the background of why he was in suburbia. But yeah, damn, that was good.
There was a little description about how he erased some of his memories. I don't know any of that or why he did that. I have no clue. But it created context for a story that I enjoyed, whether or not I knew the full context and all the background. You're right, it's completely possible. And for me, the problem's compounded, like, okay, you can say it's my fault for not knowing that it was a tie-in. Maybe I should have more context for the tie-in. Maybe it's a little bit too much to ask of these authors to create a story that's relevant to this major event and is a great comic on its own standalone. But then, like, aside from my excitement for the comic, Marvel did a really good job promoting this new character, Singularity, and I thought she looked really cool on the covers, and I wanted to pick her up and read her. And okay, you can say, fine, go read the second run, 2016. But let me read you the synopsis for volume one of this run. So we read volume zero. So volume one will collect issues 1 to 4 of the second run of A-Force. And that second run, those first four issues, the synopsis is: Marvel's newest hero, Singularity, has risen from the ashes of Secret Wars and enters the all-new, all-different Marvel universe. But will her allies from Battleworld remember her when she tries to put the band back together? To combat the most fearsome threats from across the multiverse, Singularity summons She-Hulk, Captain Marvel, Dazzler, Medusa, and Nico Minoru to her side. So, even if you remove the need for that context, this story that we just read is relevant for the next trade. I mean, this is labeled Volume Zero as if it's not necessary, but it sounds to me like it's going to be. Like, I won't be able to pick up Volume One, and if we'd read just Volume One, we wouldn't have context. The same way we don't have context now. Like, Volume 1, it would be referencing Singularity and her creation or whatever, or her actions during Secret Wars and on Battleworld, and I would still have no idea what it was, but I would even be further removed from that context by a whole nother 5 issues. And it just, if you're gonna go through the trouble of creating a new team and creating this new character and putting a really good authors on this book and building excitement for it, give me a more standalone story. That's all I really, really want. Just something a little bit more standalone.
So I think that Singularity got written into a corner a little here. And that's because I think we're supposed to feel a sense of loss about the ending, but also sweeten it. Like, it's bittersweet, right? She leaves her friends to go up into wherever, and they go all the way back to the very first opening lines.
Yep.
And talk about, and then they switch it up, so it's like, and she's a hero, she's a heroine, and, there is an island inside her. And it's meant to play off of the idea of, you know, that they're saying the things that she gave us and we gave her will live on, yada yada. So, it thematically, I thought that tied together really nicely, but it also just, to me, didn't hit hard enough. But if you're bringing someone back in the next issue, you also don't want to hit them really hard with, like, look, this person's so dead, you're so sad about it, and then be like, oh, but not. Because that's also betraying reader expectations. So I think this is a tricky thing, and I'm not... I think that thematically that ending worked really well, but on the flip side, plot-wise, and just where the character ended up felt not great, because you couldn't hit hard enough to make it feel like a strong resolution to the trade. But at the same time, you know, you don't want to just, like, leave it hanging and be like, oh, she'll be back.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, well, I mean, at the end of this trade, I wasn't completely sure that she was fully obliterated. I think also the illusion that she is that this character's singularity is part of the fabric of the universe, and there's no origin story for her given, and she just kind of peers out of the sky. And part of me thinks maybe she's some embodiment of the universe outside Battleworld, or the multiverse expressing itself in a certain way. There's no explanation for her origin, so when she just kind of disperses and she's shown up in the stars as stars and kind of back into a state that's where she remembers. Those last couple panels, I don't think it's entirely definitive that she's completely obliterated to death. I think that's what the other characters are supposed to believe, and so it's supposed to give them impact, and I think it does for them, especially Nico, who's just getting repeatedly punched in the gut. But just... It leaves you hanging there too. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think it's that sense where we almost wonder, well, maybe they're never going to see her again.
Yeah, and even that's enough, just never seeing her again.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, maybe I needed a greater sense. How do I even phrase this? This is kind of weird to think about. The fact that they said there is an island inside her, that seemed like the closure, because they went all the way back to the beginning and said, okay, here. It ends the way it started, but now this is part of her. To me, that felt like the turning of the last page, closing the book. Okay, bye. And this is probably just personal preference, but I almost want, like, more of a lead that she'll be back, you know?
Yeah, more of a wink.
Yeah. Yeah, like, not just that the island's inside of her, but maybe that we should expect that to have changed her in ways that are important, that will affect her actions very soon, that kind of thing.
And I mean, all of this Battleworld stuff in Secret Wars is in the canon for this universe. Like, this isn't an alternate universe that gets completely unwritten. This stuff carries over. So, this character that they've created will matter one way or another. Whether it's just in references or whatever down the line. She will matter. She's supposed to matter. So, okay, let's turn this train around. What did you like in this comic?
I really liked it thematically. Like, good. All the little lessons that it's telling, like, the things that you take from someone and give remain. I thought that was really nicely delivered.
Yeah.
I really also enjoyed the "it's the small things." I felt like that could have actually been expanded upon a bit more, because I think we saw a lot of big things So we were shown big things and then told small things matter. And we see that a little, like Nico takes a photograph every day, or Singularity collecting the cat collar, the lock of hair, yeah. Her little gestures to people. But at the same time, I think that could have been expanded on. I like the characters a lot. So like you said, for instance, Carol Danvers wasn't terribly fleshed out. I thought She-Hulk and Medusa and the tension going on there was really well done.
Yeah, that was cool, because She-Hulk, never having been a ruler, she's led a team every now and then, but like Baroness of Arcadia was pretty, that's a pretty baller title, and Medusa straight up is a queen. So, kind of, why isn't Medusa leading? Because Medusa's a natural leader, and we've seen her be a natural leader before in other books, and it kind of makes sense that she would be, but there's some Battleworld construct that means that it's She-Hulk who's the leader, and it's interesting, that tension between them, the tension that isn't tension, you know? I like that dynamic, I think, the most.
And I think, too, like, so She-Hulk, as a lawyer, has to serve, like, the spirit of the law more than the letter of the law. And Medusa, as a queen, gets to, like, say the letter of the law. So they already have these opposing viewpoints about, like, how ruling and governance should work. And then they're thrown into Doom's world, where the spirit and the letter of the law are obey Doom.
Yeah.
Because what else would it be with him?
Yeah.
And seeing She-Hulk try to grapple with that, and I thought it was really interesting that she didn't fight the verdict with America Chavez. She was just like, yeah, I'm so sorry, this sucks, bye. That was a really interesting She-Hulk moment for me. And I thought that was an interesting and definitive character moment, because it tells you exactly right then, this is who we have as She-Hulk, someone who doesn't want to disobey and who's taking the greater good over individual welfare.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we get to see how that plays out. Is it worth it? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, because I think She-Hulk, not as the leader of this team, would try to punch those Thors. But She-Hulk,
yeah,
as the leader and as the Baroness of Arcadia, is taking the weight of those decisions in balance. I think the way a good lawyer would. So, whereas I think normally she would want to just punch them, I think she realizes, well, these are the Thors, and this is just a couple of them. Do we want all of them to come here and try to punish us? Do we want to try just us to fight the entire weight of the construct of this world? And you get the sense that they would lose. This whole world is built this way. It's built around Doom, and if all of these Thor-level power characters are carrying out Doom's will, you get the sense that She-Hulk, she's strong and all, but they ain't gonna win. So she has to take it in balance, and it does set that tone, like, right away. But I think that also sets up the fake tension between her and Medusa right away, because Medusa, as a queen, is always portrayed as a protector. You protect your people because they are your people. You shepherd that flock. That is Medusa. So there's that tension there, but if you know the characters well enough, you know that it's just, it's a superficial tension.
Yeah, and I think that even using a superficial tension there, like, it was a good way to show who these people were, yeah, in this story. So, I talked about the things I liked about this. What about you? I mean, I think we agree on the plot, but what do you find good?
I really like the art, I think it's like the third or fourth page where there's a splash page of them flying over Arcadia to begin the patrol. And it's just beautiful, and they look badass flying over it. I like the... It's so stupid. I like the fight at the end when they're fighting the zombies, which, by the way, is the dumbest thing. if you just want a
yeah.
big... If you just want a big impending threat, just zombies. Okay, sure, but really, no. But what I liked was the way, in the art, that they were all grouped by their kind of power set. So there's one panel that is Dazzler... who is it? Dazzler, Jubilee, and Carolina Dean. Like, all the light show.
Oh, yeah.
All the light show heroes. And there's another one, it's Elektra and Psylocke, you know, the sword wielders. I like the way it kind of grouped them, and it showed a lot of self-awareness of these characters and the roles that they fill. And so, it feels a double purpose, right? Like, if you're bringing in
Nico Minoru, then you're saying, okay, all of these runaways are in this world. And you see Gertrude and her raptor in the background in one of these, which is awesome. The artist did a really good job of throwing in background characters from such random different places that were just awesome. Just whatever in the background, who cares? But it, in doing this kind of a thing, like grouping them together, it shows you why you don't see more of everyone, right? Because the construct is A-Force is every female superhero. And then there's this kind of core team, sort of She-Hulk and her lieutenants. And Dazzler's there because you can't have three light show superheroes. It's you don't need three light show superheroes. You just need one, and we pick Dazzler. For whatever reason, we pick Dazzler. And these other two are here. They're part of this universe. They're part of this team. But, you know, Dazzler's one of the lieutenants. And it does a good job of showing everybody has their role that they're playing. And the self-aware. I just got such a giggle when I saw Carolina Dean, and it's like such a. I kind of want like a light show team now, like the disco team.
I don't know, because then I'd have to read something with Jubilee in it.
Yes, but you'd also get to read Dazzler.
True, but
Dazzler. I don't know. I like Dazzler.
Could just read Dazzler.
That's true.
I mean, she has her own run.
Yeah. Couple
various,
of yeah. Oh, which so. Reminds me, also, the other thing I really liked was the descriptions of each hero.
Oh my god, she's beauty, she's grace, she'll punch you in the face.
Yeah, Miss America Chavez.
That was Chavez. My favorite.
I love that character so much. I, like, never read her in anything. I think we've read her in Young Avengers and this, and I've seen her somewhere else before, and every time I see her, I love the shit out of her. Because it's a baller name, too, Miss America Chavez.
Confession. Every time I see her, I think American Maid from The Tick, and I don't know why. But, like, once I read that tagline, I couldn't get it out of my head, because I was thinking, that is so fitting for American Maid. Yeah, a weird tangent there.
Yeah, and I love that whenever something's happening with her, people just yell out, America!
Yeah.
And I know it's her name and all, but I love that.
I love that her superhero name and her actual name are the same. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. When you're badass that's enough, convenient. You can do that.
Yeah.
So I guess Carolina Dean's cameo and descriptions are the things I like. I like Singularity in this. I think it was a good slow build on a character. I like the. I mean, it's kind of. What you do, you give a vague, mysterious character. You give them a little quirk that you attach with them that lets the audience attach. I liked her little magpie pack riding, just grabbing at little things. And it did a good job of endearing her to other members too. Like Medusa gives her some of her hair, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. Like Medusa at first wants to like kill her. And then he's like, oh, well, I guess you're harmless. Here, have some of my hair. It does a good job of endearing you, too, as a reader.
Yeah, it was a very sweet moment for both of them.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I liked her as a character and her slow burn introduction. And I mean, you get attached to her for no really, like, good character reason. But I just think she looked cool. I like that starry look. I think it looks neat.
Yeah, I really like the art for her. Especially that scene where she is taking all the zombies with her out to space. I thought that was drawn really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. What else do we like about this? I mean, I didn't have a bad time reading it. I blew through it really quickly, though. Did you find that, too?
Yeah, it was fast.
Yeah.
You know, I liked the little touches, like the Thors. Like, that's something I can just accept, that there are a bunch of people who are Thors, and they are the military force of this world. That seemed very fitting to me.
And it's totally, there's Thor, there's Beta Ray Bill, there's Lady Thor, Jane Foster Thor, Frog Thor, Sif. Who's not Thor, but is Asgardian, and we see her with a hammer. Valkyrie, who is also his Guardian of Zero. Like, there's enough Asgardian Thor-ish attached characters. You could believe them as a police force anyway. And then you add in characters like Gamora, who have gotten a power upgrade to be part of Doom's police force. And it's a lot more believable right out of the gate.
And it's, like, the more generally rigid characters, too. Like, Colossus was in there with the Thors. And I was just like, you know, I can see that. He would definitely be part of Doom's secret police if he were going to cooperate with Doom.
Yeah, that'd be a good way to line up as an insurgent.
Yeah.
Which, I have the Thor's trade as well, the Thor's Battleworld trade, and I guess I'll read that now. Likewise, I bought that because I was into the Jane Foster run, and that was the next trade in the subscription order, so I just kind of picked it up. And now I know what the context is, so maybe I'll read that. And maybe I'll go back and read Secret Wars. I don't know. This isn't particularly making me want to read that. It's making me want to read other things now that I know the context. The actual thing with Battleworld and Doom doesn't seem particularly interesting on its own, though.
Yeah, for this one, I almost feel like, to me, what's not interesting is the main big event. It's the tiny mythologies that were created around it. Because I feel like Marvel is doing an interesting job playing with stories that they never, you know, would have otherwise been able to touch.
So you're going to pick up the Marvel Zombies Battle World?
I might pick up the Thor one, but...
Well, you're welcome to borrow it.
Oh, thank you.
But yeah, like, I've been borrowing the Bayonetta from you for like a year.
That game is amazing. Play it.
Okay, I promise I'll get around to it eventually.
Yeah, and you don't. I actually have it on PlayStation as well, so it's yours now.
Take my time.
Yeah, I feel like I'm having a hard time talking about this comic. Like, I had my one little gripe, and I had the things I liked, but I don't feel like it's urging me into waxing philosophical.
Yeah, there's not a lot of meat here.
Yeah,
which isn't. I mean, it's a criticism, but...
Well, not everything has to be, you know, meaty.
Yeah, no, I know, and it's... This comic was asked to do a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
This comic was asked to give you the context for Arcadia and A-Force, introduce a new character in Singularity, have it tie in and matter to the Secret World, or to the Secret Wars Battle World story arc, and do all of this within 5 issues, and... You know, if you can, have a cohesive story and do a little bit of character development. That's a whole lot to ask in 5 issues. And I think this comic doesn't do necessarily all of that, but it has really good art. It has a plot that's relatively easy to follow and does a good job of filling you in the gaps and attaching you to these characters. You know, I think we both like Singularity, even though there's not a whole lot there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it does what it needs to do, pretty well. It can't do all of them. It's too much to ask of a 5-issue comic. So it's one of those things I don't blame the authors for not hitting these marks. I blame editors and consumers for consistently always buying these major event comics. Because that, I mean, if every time they do a major event series, people buy the comics and buy the tie-ins, Marvel and DC are going to keep doing major events. So the more and more you buy it, the more and more this will happen. I just want cohesive, good, new stories. This isn't a cohesive story.
Yeah. Shall we just rate this?
Yeah, I think we're both rambling forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about I go first? I'll give this...
Sure.
I'm going to give it a 2.5. I liked it. I don't feel like I wasted my time, but at the same time... At the same time, I feel like we're just missing too much context. I had a good time. I read this. The art was good. I had fun reading it. But there's nothing to sink into here. And while there's not always a need for you to sink into something, at least make it a fun ride. And there's not enough here to have made it a fun ride, because Loki was too obvious. And Nico Minoru just gets punched in the gut a lot. And... The only really interesting tension here happens between She-Hulk and Medusa, but even that's, it's very, it's, what's the word I used before? Not, superficial. It's a very superficial kind of tension. So mm-hmm. As much as I like stuff about this comic, it didn't particularly stand out to me, which is disappointing because I really wanted it to. And that might also be the expectation I put up for this comic, and my love of strong female characters, and my want for an all-female team, and how cool I thought Singularity looked as I was scrolling through Tumblr. I might have set this book up to be too much, which is, I guess, my fault. But 2.5, I feel like there is something here. It just, it could have been born out of something else, and I would have liked it more. So yeah, 2.5.
All right. I have to give it the same, and that's purely on the basis of I think that in a few months, I won't remember this comic. And I know that I've been basing my ratings a lot more recently on whether or not I'm going to find something memorable, but we've been doing this podcast for a number of years, and we've read a lot of comics in that time, and I think that that's making me really realize that the things I like need to stick. I don't see this sticking because, as I said, the plot... The story was not captivating to me, and what was going on with the characters was not enough to hook me in without that. So, I don't know. I did like the concept a lot. I liked the characters, and I think that, like, the line-by-line writing was well done. This comic actually did dialogue really well.
Yeah, true.
But I, as an overarching view of it, I can't say that I was super impressed. And I don't even know if I went into it feeling very excited. I do like the characters that I knew were going to be in it. But, yeah, I don't know. I just, for some reason, I feel bad giving it an average rating. But maybe that's just because it's supposed to be, like, a best of.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually why, now that I think about it. Because if we weren't talking about our best of list, I tend to not have a problem giving a comic a worse rating. And also, the author, Giulia Wilson, is someone for whom I have a great deal of respect, so I don't want to give something she did a lower rating. But I guess, you know, like, not everything is going to be for everybody, so there's mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
2.5.
Yep. Okay. So, that was a comic. I'm glad we read it. I've owned this trade for a while, and I've been meaning to read it, and it gives me context for Thor's that I'm also going to read pretty soon, and all this stuff that happened last year that I'm finally catching up with. But, I mean, this is what happens. For some people, what they read for event comics. It's something that they really, really enjoy reading. It's something we kind of flirt with off and on, too. Like, we really want to read Blackest Night, because I know Jen, you, and David really like the Geoff Johns mythology for Green Lantern and the different colors and the spectrum and that kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. and I really like the Green Lantern core that was around that time with Kyle Rayner and Guy Gardner. But straight up, Blackest Night is a major event comic, and it rolls into Brightest Day, which is another major event comic. And it's always a difficult balance, because these major event comics can be home runs, or they can bog down a whole universe. It's tough. It's tough. So maybe if we had more context, this would make sense on a best of 2015 list. Maybe this was the best, this might have been the best side story of all of the Secret Wars Battle World stuff. This could have been the best of that entire event. And then that's good context, because that's a whole lot of material created for this major event, and if this is the best event, then that deserves to be as part of best of 2015. But without that context, I can't.
Yeah,
I can't read all that. I don't have time. We read for this show. I have my polls. I read a lot of comics, and I don't have time to read every event that both of them do and every side story for all of them. I just, like, it's not possible. I feel like I still feel bad for giving G. Willow Wilson and Marguerite Bennett a 2.5.
Yeah.
And I'm going to keep feeling bad. Because next week, we are reading Star Wars, Darth Vader, Vader. Marvel took over the Star Wars comic book franchise last year, and they have been printing the shit out of it. And apparently one of the best things to come out last year was Darth Vader, the first trade of the Darth Vader run. So Darth Vader has his own run. This is the first shred of that. There's another side run called Vader Down, which started at the end of last year and carried over into this year, and was supposed to be, like, the best thing ever written for Star Wars comics, is what I keep hearing. I have that trade. I really want to read it. But since that ended out this year and we kind of wanted to solidify this stuff sooner, we're going to read the first issue, or we're going to read the first trade of the Darth Vader run. So we're going to read Star Wars Darth Vader Vader and see what Marvel's doing with the Star Wars franchise. I'm excited to read this one, too. I have, like, all of these Star Wars trades, and I've barely started to crack into them all.
I'm excited, too, because I remember the last time we read Star Wars, I enjoyed a lot of those. Also, every time you said Vader, Vader, I chuckled.
Vader, Vader, yeah.
Vader, Vader.
Vader, Vader. The last time we read Star Wars for the show, it was when Dark Horse lost the license, and we did a Farewell to Star Wars Dark Horse Comics 3 episode run.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Last time we read Star Wars was to say goodbye to DC, so let's say hello to Marvel and see how they're doing. Anyway, that's next week. Star Wars Darth Vader. Vader! Has an exclamation point. So, Vader! Gotta do it that way. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.